Good morning.
Good morning, America. This is Thursday, May the 12th, 2005. This is the House Committee on Veterans Affairs, and we missed you on Tuesday. Just wasn't the same. We have enjoyed so much having the opportunity to be with our military and our veterans all this session. It's just warmed our hearts. So, first of all, we'd like to recognize all the veterans here. And if you'd stand, and Kevin, if you'll raise your hand, we want to recognize you. Most appreciative for all that.
You want me to get killed?
Your service, and I bet there are ones here who probably served in World War II. Just like to recognize you, since this week was a special commemoration. Are there ones here who served in World War II? No?
I used to work with the boss warden.
Well, okay, well, that counts. Well, we're so grateful for all of those who fought in that that war. Okay, this morning we want to open a work session on House Bill 2861. Mr. Stembridge.
Madam Chair, House Bill 2861 requires the Director of Veterans Affairs to establish a program to provide grants to veterans for temporary housing. Madam Chair, we attempted to put this bill and several other bills into House Bill 2864, which is the next item on your agenda. There was also concern that we had not put a rental assistance bill into the schedule for a work session, and that's probably the bill that I should have put on this agenda. So I'll tell you that it was my fault that this got put on there. It probably shouldn't be there.
So what would you suggest that we do today?
I would suggest that you may want to consider closing the work session on this one and go right to House Bill 2864.
Well, I think that'll be the shortest work session we've had this session, Doctor. But we'll do as you tell us. I'm closing the work session on House Bill 2861, and I'm opening a work session on House Bill 2864.
That's just a Madam Chair, you have seen the amendment, the -2 amendment to House Bill 2864 last week. I wanted to point out a couple of things on it. First of all, you have a separate bill, House Bill 2602, that provides assistance, financial assistance, to the families of active National Guard. And I'm not sure. I don't think the reserves are included in that bill in 2602, but it provides for the needs, the financial needs of families whose quite often the breadwinner has gone off to serve in active federal duty. This bill is intended to apply to veterans. And the concern here was destitute veterans that needed that have a lot of needs that were expressed in other bills that you have. If you look on page 1 of the -2, you'll see a list of needs that this fund would cover. And I'm just going to read a couple of the things here. Emergency or temporary housing, emergency medical or dental expenses, emergency transportation expenses related to starting a business, and this would include business licenses or occupational licenses, would be temporary income after military discharge, and legal assistance. The definition of who is eligible for this starts at the bottom of that -2 amendment and includes immediate families. And then it cites the definition of veteran in ORS 408.225. And I had quite a discussion with the Legislative Council on how to cite this definition in here. And we'll talk. I'm going to come back and talk about that also. At the top of page 2, you'll see B and C, capital B, capital C. These are intended to include persons who are coming off of mobilization but may not qualify as veterans.
Combat.
Correct.
So B and C relate to those who may have been on federal active duty, but it may not have been combat duty. It may have been a disaster, an emergency, a fire.
They might have been sent to Biloxi to staff.
Immigration control, something like that. And it's my understanding we could ask the good Colonel Caldwell to come forward since he's here, and we're so grateful as usual. It was my understanding that all federal active duty mobilization is at least in a term of 30 days or more. And good Colonel, could you tell?
Madam Chair, for the record, Colonel Mike Caldwell, Deputy Director of Military Department. Typically, the call up to federal active duty on a Title 10 status is no less than 179 days. That's the typical. What we have seen here of late has been 18 months, but the average, I mean, not average, traditionally before 911, the orders were usually cut at 179-day intervals.
Well, could we be called up for federal active duty that is not combat duty, I mean, to fight the floods in Florida? Or?
Madam Chair, absolutely. In fact, as we had a good number of soldiers that were called to guard airports, if you may recall, after 911, and they never left Oregon, but they were on federal active duty. And they were on federal active duty for, most of them were on for a year.
And would most of those call-ups, in that case, be at least 30 days?
Well, Madam Chair, that is correct. It's possible you could go less, but it's very unusual that you would see a conversion from Title 32 to Title 10 status without being at least 179 days.
So, Colonel Boquist, what would be your thought on those two then? I had previously marked those out.
I had too.
And so now I'm questioning, should we leave? Do you have a copy of this?
No, I don't.
Bill, we'll get you one.
Madam Chair.
Yes.
Well, I don't think it impacts one way or another.
You don't.
Like speed is the essence.
Okay. What we did not want to happen, we did not want there to be a conflict between this bill of emergency assistance for veterans versus the bill emergency assistance for military. So that's what we were trying to guard against. So I guess as soon as we give you a chance to see these two categories.
This describes the fact that this describes who's eligible veteran, and then these two statements here have to do with coming out of the 30 days.
And that's the reason previously, committee members, that I had not gone forward with this bill, because it appeared there was a conflict, and we certainly don't need that.
Madam Chair?
Yes, Representative Boquist.
I believe that the cleaning up of the entire veterans' meaning, if I recall correctly from the meeting, was that we simply wanted them to insert, one of the issues we wanted them to do is to insert the definition of veteran per the statute that we have already passed out of this committee, and I believe it's already passed out of the Senate, maybe on the way to the governor's desk. And while Section 3, farther down, Section 3 is actually the same terminology that passed out of this committee, passed out of the House, and passed out of the Senate, I believe. So it's Section 3 is a redundant section to existing law, but I think, again, it doesn't have a germane impact.
And the other issue was on page 1, line 16, that I had also thought needed a change. Temporary income should be after military discharge under honorable conditions, rather than just needing temporary income after military discharge, because we didn't feel that those with dishonorable discharges should get this assistance.
Follow up the Madam Chair. You recall in the definition of OR 408225, those who receive dishonorable discharges don't qualify as a veteran.
So you feel that's corrected?
Yes, okay. Ma'am.
And we don't need to go back for a add under honorable conditions.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, I think also you have in line 18 the Director of Veterans Affairs shall adopt regulations. And I think that gives them leeway to state that very item about the discharge in that section as well. So I think the director, okay, director has that leeway and has that authority.
Okay. And on page 2, Colonel, the lines 3 through 8, you feel, as Representative Boquist does, that it's all right to leave those in the bill. There would not be a conflict between.
Madam Chair, I think it's very clear, and I think it would do what your intent is.
Okay. Thank you. All right. Committee, is there any other discussion? Is there any objection to the Dash 2 amendment? If not, the Dash 2 is adopted. I'll accept the motion.
Can I ask one question?
Yes, sir, Representative Hart.
I thought Dr. Sandberg was going to come back and talk about, on page 2 and line 2, the whole issue related to...
Representative Hart, Madam Chair, Representative Boquist covered that. I just wanted to point out that in our discussions with Legislative Council, I told them I wanted to cite ORS 408.225, and they said, well, that's 180 days. And I said, no, it's being changed. If you just cite the statute, the definition in this bill would move along with the change in the statute. And they, to go beyond any doubt, they reproduced the whole what you have, we handed out, which is a House Bill 2687A engrossed. They reproduced that as Section 3. So it's a sort of a conflict amendment. It makes sure that if this bill passes, that new definition is included.
Okay. Which has already passed.
This was last week, so we weren't...
Well, I tell you.
Better
there's
be
a lot of it. Sorry. That's exactly my opinion. Yes. Does that answer your question, Representative Hunt? All right, I'll accept the motion for House Bill 2864. Representative Boquist?
Madam Chair, I move House Bill 2864... as amended, with a do pass recommendation and referral to House Budget Committee.
Thank you, Representative Boquist. Oh, don't start that again, Donna.
That's a French name, man. That's a slang.
That's, I beg your pardon. Move and Boquist don't go together. Representative Boquist, I apologize, moves House Bill 2864 as amended by Dash 2 amendment to the House Budget Committee with a do pass recommendation. Is there any discussion?
Does part of that motion need to also rescind the subsequent referral to Ways and Means that was on it?
Madam Chair, Representative Hunt, we're told that we don't need to be that specific, that it by implied consent we will assume that. But if you'd like to, we can say that's what the motion will actually reflect, is that you are requesting rescission of the subsequent referral to Ways and Means.
And I will add to my motion with the rescinding of the subsequent referral to Ways and Means as previously determined.
And that was my intent, Madam Chair.
Yes, thank you, Representative Boquist. All right. Will you call the roll, please, Aaron?
Representative Barnhart.
Excused, and his son is graduating from Vanderbilt. So we're very proud for that family.
Representative Boquist.
Yes.
Representative Bruin.
Aye.
Representative Barr.
Excused.
Representative Hunt.
Aye.
Representative Thomas.
Aye.
Chair
Nelson. Aye. House Bill 2864 is amended by the Dash 2. We'll now move on to the budget, and we're very happy that this will give us a program that will give assistance to our veterans. Thank you very much. Dr. Sandberg, we'll now have. I'll close the work session on House Bill 2864. I'll open a work session on House Concurrent Resolution 14.
Madam Chair, this is another one that you've heard a couple of times before. This recognizes June 14, 2005, as Honor Our National Guard Day. We've held this over because you were going to determine a different date or another date.
Yes, and I'd like to call the good colonel, who now I'm sure will be able to tell us the date of the birth of the Oregon National Guard. Oh, no. I'm liking that look.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, Colonel Mike Caldwell, Deputy Director of Military Department. I can't give you the Oregon National Guard. I can tell you the one that we celebrate for the National Guard as a total, which is December 13th. I would assume that since the Oregon National Guard predates the statehood as a territory, that we would pick February 14th as our date for the Oregon National Guard, because that's when the state became a state. But I think for our purposes, we always celebrate the creation of the National Guard in the nation, which is December 13th.
And what is your preference?
13th of December.
Okay. Okay, then, I understand we got into considerable trouble, Dr. Stembridge, for having so many conceptual amendments previously. Do you dare try it one more time?
Madam Chair, we got into considerable trouble, and I think that's where we're headed again, because I think you're going to need to conceptually amend this. This
okay.
Is, I would say this is a concurrent resolution. This is not Oregon law. So there won't be court cases on this, I don't believe.
I hope not. Okay, thank you so much again, Colonel Caldwell. I will entertain a motion to adopt December the 13th as honor our Oregon National Guard Day. Representative Bruin.
Well, I have a question with the rest of the bill, and we
okay.
had brought this up, and I don't think we resolved it.
Uh-oh.
It's the numbers, whereas 10 members of the Oregon National Guard have died, and whereas 36 soldiers with significant ties have died.
That need to be updated.
Let's hope that doesn't grow bigger, but we can almost guarantee those numbers won't okay. stay the same, and I would recommend simply eliminating the numbers.
Okay.
And whereas gallant members of the Oregon National Guard have died, and definitely...
Mm-hmm. That's a very good idea.
And you have a suggestion for line 10?
Same.
Gallant?
It doesn't have a word.
Yeah, brave.
Brave, yeah.
We like brave.
We've got gallants to be brave.
I like gallant.
I like gallant.
Gallant.
Okay. Two gallant and brave.
Two gallant.
Two gallant.
You put an and, you're going to court.
And what is the definition of gallant?
More than brave, man.
Okay. So we'll say, whereas 36 additional soldiers, or whereas additional soldiers, additional gallant soldiers.
No, I think you just get rid of the number.
I think so.
I think in line 8 you say, whereas gallant members of the Oregon National Guard, etc. In line 10, whereas gallant soldiers with significant ties to it. I think you just remove the number and add gallant in both lines. Keep it simple.
Okay. Is there any further discussion? Okay. Would you like to move to adopt the House concurrent resolution?
Madam Chair, I would move House concurrent resolution as conceptually amended to the House floor with a due adopt. Oh, and including the do I need to spell out the conceptual amendments?
Yes, please.
Okay. We're switching the conceptual amendments are changing in line 8, removing the 10 and adopt and putting in gallant, and in line 10 removing the 36 and putting in gallant, and then adopting the National Guard Day as December 13th.
I think that's a wonderful day, and also then line 17 we will also change.
Correct.
Madam Chair, on line 17, would you like to say December 13th of every year?
Yes. Yes, wouldn't
we? I would
we?
Move all of, yes.
All of that. Thank you.
I will continue to move all of that to House Concurrent Resolution 14 and to move that to the House floor with a due adopt recommendation.
Representative Scott Bruin has moved House Concurrent Resolution 14 with the conceptual amendments of changing the date to December the 13th as honor an Oregon National Guard Day and changing the numbers in lines 8 and 10 to the word gallant, and line 17 changing June 14th to December 13th of every year as a conceptual amendments to the House floor with a due adopt recommendation. Is there any discussion? Yeah.
Representative Bogus.
Yes.
Representative Brown.
Aye.
Representative Farr.
Excuse.
Representative Hunt.
Aye.
Representative Kong.
Aye.
Representative Barnhart.
Excuse.
Chair Nelson.
Aye. House concurrent resolution as conceptually amended has been adopted. Thank you. We'll move to the House floor. I hope. And I hope Dr. Stembridge will still be employed.
Okay. Madam Chair, do you want to go for the other?
Yes, right here. Yes. I'm going to close the work session on House Concurrent Resolution 14th, and I want to be sure I understand now. House Bill 2861, the one we started with, is now included in, I'm not sure who the sponsor of that was, but is now included. I was thinking it was, is that your bill, Representative Hunt and Farr? 2861?
No, that's a different bill.
Okay. The grants for temporary housing in House Bill 2861 are now a part of House Bill 2864. Okay, thank you. I move that the rules.
Why don't you just open the
work session,
On these, open a work session on these bills, and I'll explain the process.
All of them?
Yes.
Okay. I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 2677, House Bill 2700, House Bill 2843, and House Bill 3413.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, this is a we posted this for reconsideration for one purpose, and that is to change the subsequent referral to the Budget Committee instead of Ways and Means. We've had a number of calls about people who thought you might want to reconsider the amendments and all that, and we told them that the sole purpose for this, as approved by the Speaker for this agenda, is to change the subsequent referral. And I have provided a little bit. There's a certain procedure that needs to be gone through, and first is to suspend the rules in order to reconsider. The second is to actually move for reconsideration, and then if both of those motions are successful, you have the bill in front of you again as it was before you sent it out the first time. The motions to suspend the rules and to reconsider require two-thirds, which in this case would be five members of the committee.
Okay, and do I make that motion?
I would suggest that you just ask a member to make the motion. I think that
Representative Klomp, would you move that the rules be suspended in order that we can Bruin's got it. Okay, Representative Bruin, would you so move?
My question to Dr. Stembridge is, can we do this in block, or does it have to happen one at a time?
Either way.
Be easier doing a block then, right?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Madam Chair, I move that the rules be suspended in order that we reconsider House Bill 2677, House Bill 2700, House Bill 2843, and House Bill 3413 for the purpose of referring the bill to the Special Committee on Budget.
And would you mind to say re-refer?
I will say that. I'll say re-refer, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Is there any discussion? Are there any objections? Do I have to have a roll call?
We'll find. Okay. If there's no objections, we will show this vote as
that motion passes 5-0.
Okay. Madam Chair, may I ask a question of Dr. Stembridge?
Yes.
I've got next on here. I move that we reconsider all those again. Okay, Madam Chair, I move that we reconsider House Bill 2677, House Bill 2700, House Bill 2843, and House Bill 3413.
Representative Bruin has moved that we reconsider House Bill 2677, 2700, 2843, and 3413. Is there any discussion? Any objections? Okay, that motion passes 5-0.
And I would just point out that the reason there's two motions here is because the first motion was just to suspend the rules.
Right.
And then you're stating what the purpose is for suspending the rules. Now, the second motion, it does seem redundant, but now you're actually let's reconsider this. Now you have all four of these bills back in your committee, and just as they were before they went out, with the same. There's no changes to them from the last motion that went out. Still got all these specific amendments and all that we originally sent out.
Okay. And can we move them in block now, or do we have to take them individually?
I think you've moved them in block, but
Madam Chair, do you want to speak to that, or do you want me to?
I was just going to say, I would request that we. I was perfectly happy to support the first two motions. I would prefer that we, on this motion, do them separately.
Okay.
Because we had some dissent on some of them as we passed them originally, so I'd like to keep that on the record.
Madam Chair, I have a question of the good administrator.
Yes, please.
On the actual motion to send them down to budget, do we still require a
two-thirds vote?
Two-thirds vote?
No.
Okay. Got it.
And you might be wondering if you need to rescind the referral to Ways and Means. That will be implied in the,
right.
In the motion to send it to budget.
Are we ready?
Voting no.
Madam Chair.
Representative Boquist.
I move that House Bill 2677 as amended to the Special Committee on Budget with a DUPAS recommendation.
Representative Boquist has moved House Bill 2677 as amended to the Special Committee on Budget with a DUPAS recommendation. Is there any discussion?
Yes, why don't you call?
Aaron.
Representative Bruce.
Aye.
Representative Farr.
Excuse.
Representative Hunt.
Aye.
Representative Trump.
Aye.
Representative Barnhart.
Excuse.
Representative Boquist.
Yes.
Chair Nock.
Aye. House Bill 2677 will now move as amended to the Special Committee on Budget with a DUPAS recommendation. Thank you.
Madam Chair.
Representative Boquist.
Madam Chair, I move House Bill 2700 as amended to the Special Committee on Budget with a DUPAS recommendation.
Representative Boquist has moved House Bill 2700 as amended to the Special Committee on Budget with a DUPAS recommendation. Is there any discussion? Representative Hunt.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just for the record, I would just say my concern about this is that we're not prioritizing this high enough in terms of sending the signal to the now to the Budget Committee instead of the Ways and Means Committee. So for the same reason, I will be a no on this, because I think we should be, this is of all the items, this is the one I think we should be allocating more resources to.
Thank you very much. Representative Hunt, any other objections? Aaron?
Representative Farr.
Excuse.
Representative Hunt.
No.
Representative Kopp.
Aye.
Representative Barnhart.
Excuse.
Representative Boquist.
Aye.
Representative Broom.
Aye.
Chair Nelson.
Aye. House Bill 2700 as amended will now pass on to the Special Committee on Budget with a DUPAS recommendation.
Madam Chair, I move House Bill 2843 as amended to the Special Committee on Budget with a DUPAS recommendation.
Representative Boquist has moved House Bill 2843 as amended to the Special Committee on Budget with a DUPAS recommendation. Is there any discussion? Representative Bruin.
Can you wait just a second?
Yes, I can. Committee, we will stand at ease for a few moments, please, and I'll catch up on my paperwork. Okay. All right, Veterans Committee, we're back on the record. Thank you. We are just about to consider House Bill 2843.
Madam Chair, I would point out that the House Bill 2843 has the -2 amendment. The Speaker originally put a subsequent referral to Business, Labor, and Consumer Affairs. You have a letter in the file granting permission for the committee to refer this to the Committee on Budget. It's been signed by the Speaker, if anybody wants to see that.
We already have a motion.
Do we have a motion already?
I made the motion.
I'm sorry, I did not remember that. It's such a long time ago. You have to give me a note that we did this. Representative Boquist has moved House Bill 2843 as amended to the House Committee on Budget. Is there any discussion? Representative Hunt.
This is the corollary for me on the other side. I just think this is, unlike the Veteran Service Officer Program, where I would think we should be recommending more money, this is an area, based on the feedback that I've heard from veterans, that is not among the highest priorities. So I will be a no, as I was the first time we passed it out.
Okay. Thank you. Any other discussion?
Madam Chair?
Representative Farr,
welcome
back.
Thank you very much. You know, I'm sorry that I am not able to remember back to when we had the original hearing on this, but I'm looking at some of my notes. Did Colonel Mike Caldwell testify on this particular bill? What about the Department of Veterans Affairs? Did we get...
Jim Willis talked about, as I have written here, from deployment to employment, that this seemed to be a good purpose of this bill. And the types of licenses we discussed, and let's see over here. Kevin O'Reilly spoke to this and said, yes, this will help. It will reduce the hardship. Renewals after this initial help, as I recall, Kevin, will be the responsibility of the veterans. And what else can be done as far as jobs packages would be appreciated. And then we had testimony about, regarding the post-fix of the disabled vets that was too expensive as written, but they agreed that the one-time would be satisfactory. One-time, but renewals are, after that, are responsibility of individuals. And Jim Booker was here with Colonel Caldwell. And I don't have anything other than... And yes, it was a good bill. And is needed. Representative Boquist.
Yeah, and to my motion. We had this discussion at length earlier on, but I mean, my support for this bill is really very simple. We have 40 to 50% of those returning from overseas duty, having served for the country, are unemployed. A portion of that percentage unemployed would not be considered employed when they departed because they were small business owners whose businesses were, in many cases, destroyed due to their service to the U.S. government. And our sole intent here is to try and help. We've passed unemployment benefits. We've passed things to help. Is to help that small group of individuals for that one limited time, that first year period, to get back on board. And you will recall correctly that, you know, there was concern from various entities about the length of the time, the possible revenue impact to cities or counties and stuff. And when we defined it in that area, that we're trying to help those people who lost their businesses or were deferred get restarted, this is their one time. If you're going to be the carpenter contractor that you were before, here's your one opportunity. And so it's really, it's an unemployment bill in my mind, and I, of course, will vote yes. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Dr. Simmers, is the 408.450 statute in current statute? I'm reading 408.450, duty to pay fees during military duty. No person in the military or naval service of the United States or any auxiliary corps thereof, while exercising any privilege in this state by virtue of having paid an annual license or privilege fee to any state board or commission for the right to practice a profession or engage in a trade, shall lose such privilege because of failure to pay any such fee for any subsequent year during the period the person is in such service, unless dishonorably discharged therefrom. Upon being discharged from such service under honorable conditions, and upon written application within 60 days of such discharge, every such person shall be restored to former status with respect to any such privilege without the necessity of paying the then current license fee. So the question is it not already in statute?
Madam Chair, I read that the existing statute to say that basically what they didn't pay in the past is waived. It doesn't get us into the future.
Okay.
And what we're trying to do is
one-time help to get them a start after they return.
We're trying to get them reemployed, and remember, small business is the engine of this state. When they get up and running, they start employing other people, and they may in fact be some of the unemployed that they served the last year or 18 months with overseas, and in many cases, they are.
So it appears that this, I don't know when that statute came into existence, but apparently this was an important issue in the past. So I think this is why on those questionnaires that we sent out, I wish I had my list, but it was pretty high on the list, I think, wasn't it, as far as...
Well, we have the priority preference poll, and it wasn't one of the ones that we listed on this one.
So it wasn't on that one. Okay.
What about...
I've had a lot of...
What about asking Colonel Caldwell?
Colonel Caldwell, would you come forward? What would we do without you? All I know is you can never retire.
Well, he's not going to be there. Not up from here. You decide
enough.
That.
We're pushing it, aren't we?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, Colonel Mike Caldwell, Deputy Director of Military Department. And your question, I guess, is the... I concur with Representative Boquist. I think that in some instances, having been a small business owner and knowing what licenses and fees, 18 months, 24 months deployment could impact a small business owner extremely, be an extreme impact on them. The current law, I think, was written in the context of full mobilization for the duration of a conflict, with thoughts toward a World War II type scenario where men of the Guard and the Reserve and the regular service who were called up for 4 or 5 years. I think that was the intent of that first of the 408 comments that you made earlier. And I suspect that, you know, there is that possibility again. But right now what we have is we have a limited or a partial mobilization. The President hasn't gone to full mobilization. And that limits the tour to 24 months of a Guard or reservist. It's completely in the realm of possibility, I believe, that if another world event would occur, that you would see full mobilization. And if you saw full mobilization, then the current law would probably be just fine. But that isn't what we're living with right now, and I don't know that we can predict what will happen in the future. So, again, it is a small number of people. It's not a large group of people. I would suspect that it's somewhere in the neighborhood of 5 to 10% at the maximum. Knowing what I know about our organization, I can't speak for the reserves, but it's a very small number of folks in total. I think, again, there's individuals. One of the great lessons learned from the Gulf War was professionals, particularly lawyers, doctors, were extremely harmed. I mean, their businesses were literally decimated for being called up for 9, 10, 12 months, 16 months in some of those calls, particularly for professionals. And the federal government tried to make some accommodations to fix those problems, but it's still an issue. And there is a shortage of those professionals in the Guard and Reserve because of the remembering what happened in the Gulf War. So again, it isn't a huge number of folks. It isn't going to rate probably real high on everybody's wish list because it only affects a small number, but it does affect them very dramatically.
Any other questions of the Colonel? Representative Hunt.
Actually, just in terms of further discussion, if it was focused just on, you know, the lawyers aren't here to defend themselves, so I won't make disparaging comments about lawyers, but if it was a specific profession, a license you already held that was damaged, and I can understand the damage of that, and it was doing a one-time extension of that one license, I would have no problem with that at all. There are no restrictions on the number of licenses that you could either renew or get newly for the first time in the subsequent year, and that's my concern, that we've got a significant potential fiscal on both the state and on local governments, and I just don't see how this ranks as among the highest priorities. If it were restricted to you had a small business license, you were a lawyer or a plumber or a physician, whatever, and we were extending that for an additional year, I have no objection at all. I just don't see this bill as it's written. Just seems to open it up to no limit on the number of different licenses and no limit on to whether that license was held before or subsequently.
Representative Hunt, we want to move this out today because it's our last day, but we can suggest to budget, I'm sure under the consideration of the fiscals of many of these, that this is a one-time event. So maybe you'll have a chance to catch up with it on the House floor. Okay. Is there any other question of the Colonel? Thank you again. Okay, now was I at discussion? Any other discussion on House Bill 2843? Okay, Aaron.
Representative Hunt.
No.
Representative Kong.
Hi.
Representative Barnhart.
Excuse.
Representative Boquist.
Yes.
Representative Brewer.
Aye.
Representative Farr.
Aye.
Karen Oaks.
Aye. House Bill 2843 is amended. We'll now move on to the Committee on Budget.
Madam Chair?
Yes, sir. Representative Hunt.
I would move House Bill 3413 to the Special Committee on Budget with the due pass recommendation. Isn't that the right one? Okay.
Yes, sir. Okay, Dr. Stembridge.
Madam Chair, I would just point out that it does have the dash one amendment on it, so
you were sensing my intent. 3413 as amended.
Thank you. Are we going to budget? Okay. Representative Hunt has moved House Bill 3413 as amended to the House Committee on Budget. Is there any discussion?
Representative
Kopp. Aye.
Representative Barnhart.
Excuse.
Representative Boquist.
Yes.
Representative Bruin.
Aye.
Representative Farr.
Aye.
Representative Hunt.
Aye.
Karen Nelson.
Aye. House Bill 3413 as amended will also move on to the Budget Committee. I will close the work session on House Bill 2700, 2843, and 3413, as well as 2677. I will open a public hearing and possible work session on Senate Bill 486.
Madam Chair, Senate Bill 486 extends the tuition waiver program of the Oregon Military Department to surviving spouses and dependents of Oregon National Guardsmen killed while on active duty. It increases the percentage of tuition waiver from 90% to 100%. And it declares emergency effective July 1st, 2005.
And I'm showing Dr. Stembridge in the Senate Committee on General Government. There was a 4-0 vote on this bill. And in the Senate, it was unanimous, 28-0. And public discussion, Colonel Caldwell, please. And Mac McDonald will call you.
The reimbursement of the
Madam Chairman, members of the committee, for the record, Colonel Mike Caldwell, Deputy Director, Military Department. When this bill was in the Senate General Government Committee, we support the bill. We still support the bill. We think this is a good change. I think it offers an opportunity for the 11 families of Guardsmen who have perished in the current war in Iraq. The only comment I would make is that this fund has been established in the Oregon Military Department. We have currently a very limited amount of resources in it, and it was not funded in our current budget for any additional dollars. So there's some in the neighborhood of $50,000-$60,000 in there that has been carried over from previous biennia. Typically, what we do is as we've received funds from the legislature, we've moved these funds to the Student Assistance Commission, and they administer the program based on our regulations. It's worked very successfully for Guardsmen. It's been a great recruiting tool. We've used it, depending on funding, for about a decade now. When we did have full funding, we recruited somewhere in the neighborhood of 300 high school graduates.
All right.
In the year we were fully funded, which was marvelous. The interesting thing about that was the majority of those ended up going to community colleges.
All right.
Which rather surprised us. They went through the two-year community college, which then gave us more opportunity to offer more scholarships. So it's been a very successful program for us. We think it's good for us because we can get young men and young women into the National Guard who will then get their college degrees, get their bachelor degrees, or even an associate degree, and that improves our force. So we see it very positively. This change just extends that to those families, those surviving members of the families, and we think that's the right thing to do. And again, it's a very small impact, but we do not have a lot of funding in this program. And primarily that was due to the federal government coming up with substantially more funds in our federal student or tuition assistance program. So I would suggest that this needs to be discussed at the House Budget Committee if you want to make this thing do anything, because there's just limited resources in it right now.
Thank you. Any other Representative Boakler?
Madam Chair, I'll just to make, I think I understand, but just to clarify the point, this is an expansion of an existing and longer-term Oregon Military Department program, right?
That is correct.
Any other questions, Representative Hunt?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Am I correct in understanding under the current program, it just applies to Guard members, and it's just up to 90%, and that's fully reimbursed by the federal government? As we adjust that to 100% for the Guard members, will that piece continue to be fully federally funded?
Madam Chair, Representative Hunt, indeed, the federal program doesn't have any contingencies based on any state other resourcing. You can get scholarships, you can get tuition assistance program from the state as this is done, and they still refund that. What this program says is we will do tuition assistance, period. The federal program will do tuition assistance, but it'll also, they have what's known as the Montgomery GI Bill. The Montgomery GI Bill is a stipend every month. I think it's $246 a month. So the soldier, and what we've encouraged them to do when the program was not 100% on the federal side, is we said we want you to use your federal benefits first, and then we'll backfill with the state dollars that we had available. Plus, you get your Montgomery GI Bill. So in essence, an individual could join the Guard, combine the state program, the federal program, and the Montgomery GI Bill, and virtually get a full scholarship, if you will, 100%. They get their drill pay on top of that, so in essence, they could almost go to school and not have to work all the time. They have to work in the summer, but they could actually go to school and not have to work during the year. So we found that they did better in college when they did that as well. What's changed is the federal government has upped the percentage. It used to be like 50% federal tuition assistance. Now it's 100% up to $4,500. So anything over $4,500, which we all know tuition costs a lot more than $4,500 these days, then this program could be used. However, we don't have any money in this program to use right now. So it's kind of a...
$4,500 a year?
$4,500 per year on the tuition assistance program. So currently a soldier, guardsman, reservist can get up to $4,500 a year, 100% tuition up to $4,500, and then they get their $246 a month, and they get their drill pay. So there is a gap, but it's smaller than it used to be.
And this is post-secondary in your explanation.
Mm-hmm.
What is post-secondary?
Post-secondary means beyond high school.
Okay.
Maybe we could ask for clarification. I believe that this includes the colleges and universities, in addition to the public colleges and universities in the state of Oregon, as well as community colleges.
Well, would it include trade schools? Now, do they get their tuition? Let's say they want to become a, whatever do you want to become, a pilot.
Madam
Chair. Send them to school to...
Madam Chair, I think there's language in here in the current law that talks about being able to receive a credit, an accredited institution with a credit as opposed to... I don't know. Yeah, it does. It talks...
And I'm wondering, this does not have to be state schools either, does it?
No, ma'am. It does not.
Madam Chair, if I might, the bill cites ORS 348.180, eligible post-secondary institution, and in that statute, the definition of eligible post-secondary institution says a state institution under the direction of the State Board of Higher Education, B, a community college operated under ORS Chapter 341, C, the Oregon Health and Science University, or D, an Oregon-based, generally accredited, not-for-profit institution of higher education. And I'm not familiar with what all that includes, whether it would include trade schools or not. We can find that out.
So, for example, I guess I'm wondering if someone wanted to become a broker in real estate, would that include their costs, which can be costly, or a dental assistant, or... AMP mechanic.
Madam Chair.
Representative Hunt.
I believe in that fourth clause that Dr. Sandwich just read, the reference to not for profit
would include
trade schools. So I don't think any of those you just listed would be included. I mean, the community college is non for profit. Some of the training schools are non for profit, but many of them would fall under the for profit.
So therefore, I don't think a person who wants to be a chef could not go to school.
As I hear Dr. Stenbridge is reading that definition, I don't see how that can be gauged a not-for-profit.
No. I think we should change that statute if we could get a chance. Maybe Senator Courtney would allow us to do that. Yes, because I think even now, and Representative or Colonel Caldwell spoke that the majority had gone on to community colleges, and so those who... need, you know, some special training after that for particular jobs, whether it's apprenticeships or plumbing or contracting or from, what is it, helmet to hard hat or vice versa. How about the troops to teachers?
That's the statute self-contained on that one, so that it goes to any private or public,
school.
School.
Yeah, okay.
Madam Chair, question for Colonel Caldwell. Mike, I think if I'm right here, this was implementation language that came out of the federal program so that we could implement it at the state side, wasn't it?
Madam Chair, Representative Boquist, as we wrote the bill 10 years ago, yes. We copied that.
And just for the record, so that I guess everybody knows, under, I think, it's Nichols-Goldwater Act and the funding model for the National Guard Bureau, the Army National Guard, and the Air National Guard, your budgeting and your budgeting process under federal statute is separate from the other components, is it not?
Madam Chair, President Boquist, indeed.
Okay.
That's correct.
Yeah.
Committee, I'm going to close the work session on House Bill, or Senate Bill 486, because we have the Honorable Senator Devlin here, and we know that he can only be in so many places at one time, so if you gentlemen would allow us, we'd like to open a work session on, what is the number here? House Senate Bill 575, and we'd like to welcome Senator Richard Devlin.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee, for this opportunity. I really appreciate you going to this bill. My committee is actually in the process of reviewing the Oregon Student Assistance Commission right now, and we're going through performance measures for the commission. Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'm here today to support Senate Bill 575. I believe the service of military personnel called to active duty for their state and country should be recognized with certain protections available to them upon their return. One component of their ability to easily transition back into the studies at a post-secondary institution. This transition back can be made very clearly much more easily done if this measure passes. Their call to active duty should not be an academic or financial setback for their studies. The legislation before you is modeled after legislation from Minnesota that was passed in their 2001-2002 session. Minnesota's version passed unanimously without a single vote in opposition in both their House and Senate. Signed by their governor in 2002. In the Senate Education Committee earlier this session, SB 575 was supported by the Oregon National Guard, the Oregon University System, Community College Association, Oregon Student Assistance Commission, and the Oregon Health Sciences University. SB 575 also passed the Oregon Senate unanimously.
All right.
SB 575, what it does, it applies to National Guard members who are students at community colleges, state institutions of higher education, or the Oregon Health Sciences University. When such a student is called to when such a National Guard member is ordered to active duty, SB 575 would give them certain rights. The first right would be to withdraw from a class without penalty. The second would be to take an incomplete and complete the class when they return from active duty. The third would be they, under some circumstances, could choose still, even if they were called to active duty, to complete the class. They will also receive credit for room, board, tuition, and fees not expended and prorated at that time. They are to be also readmitted or re-enrolled within 1 year after release from active duty without any redetermination of their eligibility for such re-enrollment. They also will receive...
Senator Devlin, upon their honorable release, do you have that contingency?
I don't know if that contingency is actually in the measure itself. It is not actually in the measure, but I would... I think it would relate to whether or not some of the items would have any impact. It's not actually in the measure itself, Madam Chair.
But would you accept it?
Yes.
Thank you. I didn't mean to interrupt.
And they can also receive the continuation of scholarships and grants that are funded by the Oregon Student Assistance Commission or funded by the institution that they were attending. The institution that they're attending may also not give the student a failing grade or incomplete if the student withdraws for National Guard active duty. Or can they alter the student's grade point average due to the student's withdrawal from the course due to being called to active duty? Madam Chair, members of the committee, though some institutions may already have implemented some policies similar to those in 575, in many cases they require the student to file separate petitions for academic credit and financial aid. This bill would facilitate the process and codify practices for all state institutions of post-secondary education. The purpose behind the bill is to make National Guard members transition back to their education as easy as possible. Senate Bill 575 ensures that financial and academic hurdles to their continuing education are one less obstacle they will face. Madam Chair, if I can say, one of the real benefits of this bill is having a very clear policy for post-secondary education. While I do recognize that some institutions have made efforts, particularly surrounding the current conflict that this nation is in, I would recall your attention that it was when I was in the 97 session, one of my by National Guard units was called to Croatia and Bosnia, and no such benefits were available to them at that time. Also, we could probably clearly anticipate that since that time and in the future, other National Guard units will be called to other potential conflicts around the world. I think it's a very good policy to put it in place. It's a policy that makes it very clear to National Guard members, one that actually their command can actually communicate to them very clearly that they have certain rights should they be called to active duty. And I think this is the best way to do it, and I think it's best for the legislature to make that statement.
Thank you. Senator Devlin, would you be willing to allow us to add reservists whose home of record is Oregon to this bill?
Madam Chair, I would be very pleased to do that. I have one small difficulty. The bill has a relating clause of relating to National Guard members. What I have talked to some people about is that there are quite a number of bills dealing with active duty veterans in this legislature. Some of them have used the relating clause National Guard. Others have used relating to armed services. Others have used is that sometime in the end of this session, we pass a conforming bill that basically make whatever benefits or rights that we have established in various legislation applicable to all.
Thank you so much.
That's, I think, but because this bill has that relating clause and because I can't change the relating clause, I can't include it within the bill.
Oh, thank you, though, for both of those. Questions of the Senator? Representative Boquist.
Yeah, Madam Chair, just to follow up to the Senator, and I appreciate that, because as you know, we have 3,000 reserve component soldiers from the state of Oregon, some on their second tour from the Marine Corps Reserve and Army Reserve, that would definitely be helped by this legislation.
Yes.
If we did such a, whatever it was you said, Senator, you're more experienced than I am to make it work.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Boquist, I think that would be very beneficial to do that conforming legislation, and I don't see it facing any opposition in this building. It's clearly not a partisan issue. It's clearly something that we should be able to pass. Find any bill that you could pass it within that has the right relating clause and basically say that those benefits and rights that you have provided for that are there applicable to all National Guard and Reserve members.
Thank you so much. Any other question of the Senator? Senator Devlin, you're awesome. Thank you for bringing this bill.
Thank you.
We appreciate it. Okay, while we're on this bill, we'll call Colonel Mike Caldwell.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, Colonel Mike Caldwell, Deputy Director of Military Department. Make it short and to the point. It's a good bill. We support it. It's exactly what needs to happen so we get every institution on the same sheet of music. The Senator was correct. Most institutions are complying with this. However, there are a couple that have been rather reluctant to come along during this process. And so this is a very good bill to correct that and get everybody playing off the same sheet.
Thank you very much, Colonel Caldwell. Any questions? Thank you, Mr. McDonald.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Matt McDonald, representing Oregon Veterans. Good bill, as long as at the end of the session we have the reserves included.
Thank you so much. Is this next name Jack Larson? Jack what?
LaBox.
Isn't this, it looks like a doctor's signature. Jack, please come. Is it L-A-B-O-X?
L-A-B-O-X.
You sure you weren't a physician in your former life?
Right. I did that because I had some identity theft problems when I first got discharged from the service.
Oh.
Back in 1968.
Well, certainly no one could copy that signature. Okay.
I just want to echo what Mac McDonald said and Colonel Caldwell. It's a very good bill, and as long as the word reserves, the reservists are in there, because they're all Oregonians also, and they are doing their job.
Thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
Mr. Harley Ray and Dave McDonald.
Madam Chair, committee members, my name is Harley Ray. I represent the Veterans of Oregon. I, too, endorse this bill with the add of reservists to the bill. It is, we're all from Oregon, we're all serving Oregon, and whatever branch counts.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Dave.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Dave McDonald. I am the Director of Enrollment and Student Services for the Oregon University System. As you may recall, we have testified before this committee regarding other important legislation that involves veterans and the state's public universities. We have recently created a new feeder mission program for Oregon residents who, as members of the National Guard and Reserves, were deployed into combat zones since September 11th. A handout of the Voyager program was provided to this committee on March 24th. Senate Bill 575-A is a bill that we fully support, including providing support for the reservists. For the record, though, it should be noted that our campuses have already been providing these same safeguards and support for students who are called up into active duty. The only additional benefit that this bill would provide is that in regards to the continuation of scholarship support that comes from either university funds, the FEER Mission Program, or the Oregon Student Assistance Commission. And we do support this additional benefit. This is another act that creates greater peace of mind for students who are called up to active duty to defend our nation and our citizens. We respect and honor the contribution of these students and soldiers and wish them well during their time of service. The soldiers and their families should be confident that we will do everything possible to ensure a smooth transition from campus and, as importantly, a successful return to the classroom and the university once their tour of duty ends. Thank you for the opportunity to address this bill, and we fully support it.
Thank you so much. Bob Dumig, did I pronounce that correctly? And Julie Sahonik.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Bob Dumig. I represent Oregon Health and Science University. I've submitted a letter of support and just want to say it's a good bill and we do support it.
Thank you so much. We appreciate that. Julie.
Hi. Good morning, Jeff. Good morning, members of the committee. My name is Julie Sahonik. I'm Government Relations with the Oregon Community College Association, which represents the 17 community colleges and over 330,000 Oregonians. We also support the bill and believe that it takes the next step for those Oregonians who want to serve in support of their country to have the assurance that when they come home, they can also continue their life outside the military. So we support the bill and hope to move forward.
Thank you so very much. We appreciate that. Okay, seeing no more public testimony, I will accept the motion.
Madam Chair.
Representative Hunt.
I would move Senate Bill 575-A to the House floor with a due pass recommendation.
This one has no subsequent referral.
We're trying to determine how this is escaping any financial committee.
We should be counting our blessings for that.
We don't want to hold it up when they say, wait a minute. Okay. Representative Hunt has moved Senate Bill 575-A.
Can I ask, are we in a work session?
Yes, I did open a public testimony and work session.
Thank you. I'm sorry.
to the House floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Aaron. That was Julie, now Aaron.
Representative Barnhart.
Excuse.
Representative Boquist.
Excuse.
Representative Burns.
Aye.
Representative Barr.
Aye.
Representative Hunt.
Aye.
Representative Tom.
Aye.
Chair Nelson.
Aye. Senate Bill 575-A moves to the House floor. Would I have an educational carrier?
I'll do it.
Thank you, Representative Tom.
I'd love to.
I will close the public hearing and work session on Senate Bill 575A, and reopen the public hearing possible and work session on Senate Bill 486. And Colonel Caldwell and had just spoken. Mr. McDonald, you were just ready to express your points. And I'll call Mr. Ray and Mr. LaBox.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Matt McDonald, representing Oregon Veterans. We think the waiver should be extended to widows of all those killed in action from any of the armed force, members of the armed forces. It's a good bill. We also think it should be funded to include the widows from all next of kin of all members of the armed forces.
Okay, so, Mr. McDonald, whose home of record is Oregon?
His home of record is Oregon, or serving in the Oregon National Guard or the reserve unit from Oregon. We may have some members of the Portland Reserves or the Portland National Guard that live in Washington, but they're serving in the Reserves or the National Guard from Oregon.
And serving in the Oregon Reserves and the Oregon National Guard?
Yes, ma'am.
Madam Chair?
Representative Farr?
I'm confused by that. This specifically is for Oregon residents. You have to live in Oregon. It relates only to institutions of learning in Oregon. It doesn't apply to residents of other states that served.
The relating clause does back what Representative Farr said, and fortunately in this case it says relating to tuition waiver program of the Oregon Military Department. So once again, it sounds like we've got to find a comparable bill that
yes.
would allow us to include what you've just asked. We will look for that.
Thank you.
Can I ask?
Representative Hunt?
Having listened to Senator Devlin's suggestion earlier about having one conforming bill that would say anything we passed that would be a specific benefit for a National Guard member or National Guard member family would also apply to those in the other units. Does that seem like a reasonable approach to you?
It seems like a feasible approach. And while I was sitting back there, I was thinking, my God, how are we going to implement that? Because I can see the implication is going to be really, really some problems. And the Department of Veterans Affairs or the military department, whoever you have implementing, putting all of this together afterwards is going to have some problems. But I think it's an outstanding idea.
It is an excellent idea. And we have to remember this bill is sponsored by the President of the Senate and the Speaker of the House. I want to bring Representative Boquist current that Mr. McDonald has asked that Senate Bill 486 include all surviving spouses and dependents of not only the Oregon National Guard, but all of those servicemen who's lost their lives on active duty. You know, could you come forward, Colonel Caldwell? I think we need to specify the time period here. We're either going to have to say since 9/11 or I don't believe we have a time period. Would you check on that? And also serving in the Oregon Reserves and or the Oregon National Guard, because they may not be residents of Oregon. So we've explained, unfortunately we have a relating clause that, like the last one, that precludes that, but we can look for a comparable bill. But what I'm concerned about is I think this still needs a service period time. That's either 9/11 or because otherwise we're going back to 1859.
9/11 seems to be an appropriate date.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, the relating clause is one issue that was spoken to earlier in the previous bill, and I concur with the good senator. That's probably a neat, clean way to do that. If you did it in this particular one, however, it's an established set of statutory language that we currently have that deals strictly with the National Guard. And certainly we've discussed many times about the difficulty of us maintaining records on everybody else. My fear is that somebody could interpret that without some very specific language, that it's not just guardsmen who can get the 100% tuition waiver, but it could be reservists. And it's clearly, we didn't design it for that. We designed it as a recruiting and retention effort for our people. Now, the committee may choose to do that, but if you have a relating clause that automatically just brings in the reserves for all components of this statutory language and not specifically the survivors, then I think there may be a problem that could be interpreted differently. So I would advise you to at least check with counsel on that, because that would be a real hard, we have no problem dealing with 41, 51, you know, 53, I think, total survivors now. That's manageable. We can deal with it. You know, we just require regulatory, by regulation, show evidence, and they could, and then their survivors would be eligible for these monies. But if we open it up to those 3,000 again, now we're into that. As Representative Boquist has indicated, we've got a real issue there. That is a huge management issue.
Also, Colonel Caldwell, online too, you know, when it talks about the Oregon Military Department, what does the Oregon Military Department oversee?
Madam Chair, it's a term of art used in statute to designate what the entity, the governmental entity, the responsible entity to manage the National Guard. The department is the legal entity that manages the Oregon National Guard, if you will.
So could there be other state services that would work under the Oregon Military Department other than the Oregon Guard?
Madam Chair, there's in some states you have different components. Idaho, I think, has the Veterans Department under the Oregon Military, or the Idaho Military Department. They have emergency management. It varies from state to state.
I mean, Homeland Security, would that be under the military department?
Madam Chair, not in Oregon. In some states it is that way, but not in Oregon.
Not in Oregon. And do reservists come under the Oregon Military Department?
No, ma'am, they do not.
Who do they come under?
They fall under the President of the United States and the service they belong to.
But since we do not have, I mean, that has been one of our Achilles heels this whole session, who would administer programs, who would be, you know, the heart of helping all these survivors of our reservists? Representative Boquist?
Madam Chair, in this particular case, there's no easy answer to the question, but in this particular case, the Department of Veterans Affairs would be the administrator of benefits to the surviving spouse, because the surviving spouse would have certain benefits even under state law.
Paula Brown.
So that's, at least in this case, of the 30-some that are non-Oregon Army National Guard. And I just reminded me, this again is implementation language that was implemented. We're amending implementation language that came originally out of the Nichols-Goldwater Act, which is a complete separate funding source for the Guard to administer this. So both of the bills, this one and the previous one, have that relating clause problem, and they have the problem with the federal funding stream, which manages the program, being different.
Paula, would you please identify yourself?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, in taking a look at this bill, especially what draws my attention is the portion that indicates that the Oregon Military Department may contract with the Oregon Student Assistance Commission. It may be that utilizing the Oregon Student Assistance Commission to actually administer that may be the way that you're getting around the issue of the Oregon Military Department having to track the reserve and or veterans if it were opened up to them as well.
Yeah. Okay, and the
Madam
other
Chair, I need to comment on that. Currently the way we operate is we do contract with the Oregon Student Assistance Commission. We validate applicants. So when applicants come into the Student Assistance Commission, they confer back with us and say, is Johnny Brown an eligible member? And if Johnny Brown is, we check off, send it back, they administer funding. we can do that, as I said, with surviving survivors on 41, 51, whatever the number is. That's fairly easy for us to manage, no impact. You throw 3,000 reservists who we have no data on, we can do it with 51, but not 3,000. It's going to cause a huge, significant impact on us.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'm not really sure about the 3,000. I think what Mr. Caldwell is referring to is the 3,000 reservists, and then you would be dealing with whatever number were within that were.
Could we ask you three to work on this? We must go to House session now, so we'll have to close our work session. Could you just see if we could come up with some solution to our problem and work with Representative Boquist to see that this is good by next Tuesday. And thank you so much, everyone. I'm going to close the work session.